And good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to EMForum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your moderator today. We are very glad you could join us. And for our newcomers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. Our topic today is the role of libraries and librarians in disaster risk reduction and response. There has been some interesting work going on in the library community the past couple of years, and today we will learn about this valuable community resource. Please see related links to further information on today's background page if you have not done so already. And our speaker will also be sharing some additional links, and I will get those also posted up on the background page later this afternoon. And, of course, we will have them in the transcript for your convenience. But first, for the benefit of our newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to your questions and comments. And we will provide further instructions about that at that time. If you have any difficulty with live meeting, you may use the feedback drop-down menu up at the top right of your screen to indicate that you need help or have a problem with audio. And then my associates, Ava Jean Moore or Lori Weber, will try to assist you via private messaging. We do ask you not to submit your questions or comments until we do get to the Q&A part of the program, and we ask you not to send any private messages to the speaker or myself, as we will be busy with the presentation. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, and we are also now providing audio-only MP3 versions of our programs, which you can access directly from our website or by subscribing to a podcast now available from the iTunes store. Our text transcript will be posted early next week, and if you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready. Whoops, sorry about that. One moment. Get this back. Oh, yeah. I think we're in the right. There we are. Right slide. Sorry about that. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. John C. Scott is founder of the Center for Public Service Communications and served as senior consultant to the National Library of Medicine on its development of a disaster management research center. Over the years, John has provided consulting services to the private sector and numerous government agencies in the specialized field of applying telecommunications and information technologies to reduce health disparities, to improve health services to underserved and disenfranchised individuals and communities, and to improve the collection and sharing of scientific, technical, and community knowledge to reduce human vulnerability to natural hazards. Please do see the background page for additional biographical details. Welcome, John. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning and afternoon to all. I'm assuming that some of you are disaster professionals and others might be librarians. So in particular, this session, here's to all you librarians out there. I'm talking the talk today, but you're the ones that walk the walk and frequently unsung. So hopefully today we'll shed some light on the valuable work that you and your colleagues do with the hope that there can be an increased interaction between the traditional or historic disaster risk reduction, risk management community and librarians and libraries. During much of my 25-year career in disaster risk management, I focused on information and communications and information technologies for disaster preparedness and response. I tend to focus mostly on natural hazards and risk reduction, though I've been involved with humanitarian assistance activities and response. In some of the early days of information management, I went to Somalia in the early 90s for AID's Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance, and then for the UN, UNISOM, the United Nations Operations in Somalia. to try to figure out how to get UN agencies, international organizations, NGOs, and donor governments to share information interinstitutionally and across disciplines. And during that time, I was one of the developers of ReliefWeb, which I commend to you now, but at the time, it was quite a challenge, particularly in the early years and working with the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance and UN agencies involved in disasters. There was little input sought from trained librarians, and we considered information management as a new world, and we attempted to create the wheel based on our experiences working in the field. For the past 20 years or so, I've worked with the National Library of Medicine. For those of you who are not aware, National Library of Medicine is located on the campus of the National Institutes of Health. It's part of the Department of Health and Human Services. It's the largest biomedical library in the world. And as I'll explain shortly, has an increasing activity in disaster information management. So I've been working with NLM on the development of DMRC, as it's referred to, and many of the other things that NLM does, particularly with respect to health information outreach into minority and disenfranchised communities. NLM has as a mission the collection and maintenance and sharing of biomedical information, very broadly conceived throughout the country and, in fact, the world. I'll explain that shortly. So, before I begin, the value of libraries and librarians has always been a given to me, I think, as much as anything else. That's because we're fortunate to live in a culture that appreciates the need for librarians, even if frequently we take them and the service they provide for granted. The process of integrating libraries and librarians into the mix of disaster risk reduction and response is exciting because it brings in a new set of professionals with complementary skills, eager to support their communities. And my unsolicited plug is that libraries and librarians should be considered essential infrastructure, particularly in the context of federal, state, and local disaster management. I'm happy to say that FEMA has responded recently to congressional mandates calling for this recognition, but there needs to be a greater recognition of the vital role, and this FEMA recognition comes at a time when libraries and library services are seeing cutbacks in funding and support, particularly on the local level. And as we'll see from some of the slides that I'll start now, how vital the role is, not just as we tend to consider librarians as a community resource for directing us to community and information and literature that might be of interest to us, but in fact for vital resources that are important to us as well. So thank you to my friends at the National Library of Medicine. I asked if they would share with me some slides that I might use. I've taken the liberty to edit them a little bit, but not so much as I think it changes the intent. And just for the sake of formatting, I kept the format of the slides with the NLM logo at the bottom. So just to put everybody on notice that for further information, you should get in touch with the National Library of Medicine. I'd be happy to and will answer questions. But these slides are from NLM with my editing and addition. So I will refer to library activities broadly, but my focus of concentration has been with the National Library of Medicine, which really has been out on the forefront of efforts that now include the Medical Library Association, the American Library Association, so health libraries, as well as general public libraries are involved. A few years ago, National Library of Medicine established through its long-range plan a disaster health information research center in DIMRIC. And as you see here, the idea is that it will do things internal to NLM as well as supporting the broader public, including collecting, organizing, and disseminating health information for all types of disasters in all, quote, phases of disaster, developing online disaster information tools, training librarians to serve as disaster information specialists. Some of these terms and phrases I'll get into more deeply in the discussion, and planning and training to ensure that during the disaster operations continue at NLM and its 8 regional medical libraries and the 5,800 libraries that are part of the National Network of Libraries of Medicine. So again, just briefly, NLM is located in Bethesda, Maryland, on the campus of NIH, and it has a collection, and it also houses a variety of information programs and specialists, and among them now are disaster information professionals. NLM gets its funding largely from Congress, and then uses that funding to operate its own programs, but also lets grants on a regular basis to a regional set of medical libraries, typically associated with academic health centers throughout the country in various regions. It's a competitive process in order to get such a designation as one of the regional libraries. And then NLM uses its funds in part to support these medical libraries, which then in turn support more regional or sub-regional and local medical and health libraries. And so you see this extension into 5,800 libraries, and then there's certainly a bleeding into the public library system in addition to health libraries. Next slide, and continuing, I mentioned in the early slide some of the products that the National Library of Medicine has developed with colleagues, with other agencies, academic centers, and private sector groups. And among them are three that you should know or be aware of if you're not already, and I have links to them. One is the Wireless Information System for Emergency Responders. The other is the Radiation Emergency Medical Management System. And then the newest one, the Chemical Hazards Emergency Medical Management. These are online tools that will help disaster professionals and even community first responders to go a long way in terms of identifying the status of an emergency and decision trees, et cetera, that can be used as a result of working with these softwares. And they're publicly available, and I encourage you to take a look at them through the websites that I've provided. So another thing that the National Library of Medicine has done and is doing with its colleague institutions throughout the country is developing this concept of a disaster information specialist. If you will, it's the kind of concept, if you look in particular at the way many emergency operation centers work, there are disaster professionals that are identified from particular sectors of the local or state or federal government who have understanding of the working of those sectors and how to communicate within those sectors to plan for and respond to emergencies. frequently in disasters, recurrent types of disasters, questions can be answered in somewhat of a formatted way, that questions that might come in from the community or from one sector to another. But frequently, and in emergent situations in particular, there are frequently questions that are not easily answered by format. And so someone needs to research the answer, look at where the source material is, and come up with a response or responses that then can be shared with the public. And the concept is for the disaster information specialist is who better to do that type of work than a professional trained in searching for information, preserving it, and sharing it, and understanding information needs of the community, and you know, understanding the needs of the community. Libraries, of course, are almost as ubiquitous as 7-Elevens, fortunately. If one library has difficulty, there's frequently another one that's not too far away that can help out. Most public libraries these days do have internet connectivity and serve as resources for the community, broadly speaking. And so the idea of a disaster information specialist coming from the library environment is seems particularly logical, and now it's being that concept is being piloted in several areas. So what NLM and their colleagues are doing are looking at developing the roles for libraries, providing information outreach to their communities for all hazards. Certainly the idea of local collections of information relative to the vulnerability of a community, of a local community, is important. Hurricane Mitch showed us that many community residents went to libraries when they lost their homes or lost their services, and used the libraries as shelter, for one thing, but importantly in the context of information, used the library resources to file claims with FEMA and to get information about the condition of the community. The specialist program also assesses the need for national training and curriculum and certification program for libraries interested in providing disaster health information. In this respect, they're working on developing a curriculum, that an online program with the Medical Library Association that might support the training and perhaps ultimately certification of librarians as disaster information specialists. And then they manage the disaster outreach listserv, which now has over 500 subscribers. I have the URL for that. Encourage you to look at that and become members. That URL will take you to the page where you can very easily subscribe to the listserv. They encourage the development of library partnerships and library preparedness, and learning from experiences from disasters. One of the things that has resulted from this increased awareness I mentioned was the FEMA on January 7th. FEMA changed its policy to recognize libraries as essential community organizations. As a result of this recognition, they're eligible for temporary relocation funding in times of disaster or emergency. This is now a part of the revised Stafford Act, as mandated by Congress. So this is very positive, and it's one of the first indications, public indications, of that, the recognition of the role of libraries. Let's see, here's my next slide. Also, there, as I mentioned, that there are several pilots. I've only referred to a couple here with the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response Office, ASPR, within the Department of Health and Human Services. There is a disaster information specialist who is working on a variety of topics, including ethics, public policy, and special populations. They're enhancing the collection of information, books and journals, on behalf of ASPR, developing a survey of public health officers, commissioned corps, to understand information needs. And they are a member of the Bethesda Hospitals partnership project. For those of you who are in the area or know the area, that includes the Uniformed Services University, the Health Sciences, the National Naval Medical Center, the Bethesda Medical Library's Emergency Preparedness Partnership. It also includes NLM, the Suburban Hospital Library, and the Health Sciences Learning Resource Center. And they regularly engage in drills, the results of which are public, and the lessons learned are being shared throughout the country for ultimately the improvement of local hospital partnerships. And here is an example of the work that's being done at the Uniformed Services University. And the National Naval Medical Center, and you'll see the development of the traveling classroom with the Weiser and Rem and now Chem, although that's not recognized in that slide, and looking at the interviews and surveying librarians, enhancing the collection, et cetera. And then one of the pilot programs outside the NLM community is working with the New York University, developing disaster resource information, a blog, Delicious, which is a library of media cataloging, online training class, collection development, information is assigned to the Agents of Opportunity grant, which is Agents of Opportunity are potentially harmful biological chemical substances used in association with healthcare delivery and research. And then active hospital preparedness activities, emergency preparedness, and credentialing, which is increasingly an issue in events where health professionals, other professionals well, but in this context, health professionals are available and present themselves to support the effort, and how they would then be credentialed. Refer also to the Emergency Access Initiative, which you're welcome to check out. And this is in partnership with several organizations, the idea of making free full-text biomedical literature available to affected disaster areas for a time after events, and it's been done in several cases and likely will continue. Many of you might be aware that if you just typically go online and do a Google search for biomedical literature, frequently you'll get an abstract, but without authorization or without payment of dues, you don't get the full text. In this case, with the Emergency Access Initiative, once you register, you will have access to the full text of the information and experiences. So I have here are some other resources. I'm kind of getting to the end of my allotted time. I've been a little bit of a rapid fire here at you. American Library Association resources, American Medical Library Association, the National Network of Libraries of Medicine, their Emergency Preparedness Response Toolkit, and the National Library of Medicine's Disaster Information Outreach Symposium. I would encourage you, if you have, next time you have 550 minutes of free time, that you take a look at this. It's the video cast of a symposium that took place at NLM March 29th and 30th of this year that was very exciting. It represented the first time that such a large group of library and information professionals interacted together and online with colleagues in the disaster risk management community. I think I'm going to turn this back over to Amy or to Abhijeen, but only after, again, I thank the organizers, but particularly thank the librarians for having in such really rapid order only within the past couple of years become such a significant player on the scene nationally, internationally, state and local and community. So I hope that I've shed some light on the opportunities of interaction for interaction between and among the communities, and look forward to questions and answers you might have. And if I can't respond to any of them, I'd be happy to respond you to refer you to my colleagues at the National Library of Medicine, most notably Stacy Arneson, who's the director of the program, and Cindy Love, both of whom might be on the line here, but I think probably will not be able to respond to your questions. But you can certainly get from the links that I've provided access to them, and I'd be happy to take any emails as follow-up and refer you to colleagues that might be helpful. So I'll turn it back over.
Thank you very much, John. That's just an amazing wealth of resources out there, and I think everyone's going to benefit from at least having a place to get started. Now, it is time for our Q&A, and if you would like to submit a question or a comment, you just click on Q&A from the top menu, and then you will type in the top half of the box that opens up. Then you click on Ask or just hit your Enter key. There is a hand-raising feature there, but we do not use that in our format. When you do click on Ask, your comment or question will not go directly to that panel. Instead, it goes to a moderator panel, and I will keep an eye on that. I will announce who the question is from and read it aloud, and our guest will respond via the conference bridge. And then once we've done that, I'll type in a little text, okay, and that will release the question form that where you can see it. Now, please do keep your question or comment related to today's topic and, you know, reasonably concise. You will only be able to submit one question or comment at a time just because of the mechanics of the format here. We are ready to begin now, and so whenever you're ready, please do type in your question or comment. And while we're waiting for folks to think of their question or comment, John, can you tell us, you know, how far along is that certification effort for the specialists that you mentioned?
Sure. Well, in terms of pilot application, the disaster information specialist is actually happening in several locations. But in terms of the curriculum development, National Library of Medicine is working with Medical Library Association. They have the outline of the approach that they want to take, and now they are reviewing solicitations or responses to their request for proposal for individuals or organizations to develop that curriculum on their behalf. So we're probably, and I think that time frame is when they'd like to see the draft curriculum having been developed, or at least in draft form and shared with some of the reviewers in the late September timeframe. So I would say the fall then would likely be a time to shake out the bugs of the prototype. And I don't know after that, but I would assume it would be reasonable to think early next year where something might be available either on a pilot project, but that I don't know, and I'd be happy to refer you for a specific answer to that for a timeline to NLM or the Medical Library Association.
Yeah, well, it just gives us a general idea that it's coming quite right along, it sounds like.
Yes.
Is that envisioned as part of an undergraduate curriculum or
I think ultimately it could be. My understanding is that, and not only my understanding, my encouragement would be that it would be considered very broadly. I think they're looking at it for community libraries, public libraries as well. Any librarian who wished to, or even non-librarian, I would suspect, who wished to take the program, there would be some sort of basic program that would be general awareness of the needs and the roles of an information specialist. And then from there would likely be a more sophisticated program that would lead possibly to certification and then possibly integrated into the curriculum of medical library professionals and academic health centers. Again, that's over time, and that's my understanding of how it would be envisioned. But I think they're taking it conservatively, step by step, to develop a program that works on multiple levels.
Sure. Okay, we do have a few questions now. We have a question from Tim Marshall, and he asks, has there ever been any discussion or thoughts on using libraries as volunteer resource centers for registering and assigning spontaneous volunteers?
Yes. A lot of this may very well have happened over time for ages, but the time that I first encountered such activity was after Katrina. I went down after Katrina with Stacey Arneson, whom I mentioned, from the National Library of Medicine, and we did a survey of the minority health profession schools that were affected by the hurricane. And while we were down there, we stopped by libraries and saw that on an ad hoc basis, not because of a national organized campaign, there were those kinds of efforts taking place. Now I think it is in the agenda of things to do within the library associations to provide those kinds of information resources. And as I mentioned earlier in another context, who better to do that than a library which appreciates the local resources and local institutions. And again, because libraries have frequently telecommunications resources or internet resources, the idea of being able to share the resource lists, not just within their specific community, but within the state is also an opportunity.
And as I was kind of looking through related material, I've found several examples where libraries were used for post-disaster disaster assistance type centers. Can you speak to that at all?
Well, again, libraries, and Katrina is a good example, the libraries that were functioning in the New Orleans and Baton Rouge area after Katrina, many of them, of course, or some of them were flooded and destroyed and people displaced. But those that were operating, took in people. Again, I think this is, you know, you find commonly that libraries in emergency situations when there are heat waves, like, for example, Washington, D.C., where I live, has been experiencing the past couple weeks of 90-degree plus unhealthy temperature, and the radio recommendations are to seek public, if you don't have air conditioning, seek public, you know, like libraries or theaters and that kind of thing. So for a long while, libraries have been shelter, cool places to be, particularly if you don't have that kind of resource. But importantly, they also have a trained, and this is part of that training and awareness of the disaster information specialists, is understanding what resources are available online that can help their community residents who present themselves get access to information that's important about how to file claims, for example, with FEMA or with their insurance companies, or where to go for health support, or alternatives to where they might go to find their drugs because their pharmacy was destroyed in their traditional community pharmacy was destroyed in the disaster. So there are a lot of those kinds of information resources that are post-disaster response and recovery that are being done by librarians, and likely through the efforts of NLM and the American Library Association and Medical Library Association will be done more often in the future on a more regular plan basis.
Yes, and I guess what I was referring to also was examples where the libraries are designated as the place to go, you know, to sign up for your, you know, application to FEMA and so forth. So, and you anticipated another question that we had from Dallas Milliken, so I will just kind of release that one, who asked, are libraries being utilized as heat shelters during the current heat wave across the U.S.? So apparently so.
Now, remember, I'll put in another plug. This is at a time when libraries are probably having difficulty finding the funds to provide to pay for the air conditioning bill that they get. So, you know, any of you who are, I have no way of knowing who's on the list, but any of you who are in a position that can affect public policy, the recognition that in so many ways libraries play such a crucial role that the idea of them being losing out on budget tightening because they're seen as non-essential, I think, would be very much a shame.
Okay, I have a question from Ada Dean, and she asks, she says, John, thank you for this learning opportunity. As the program grows and expands, what can interested parties do to enhance the exchange between local-level libraries and their respective emergency managers, even in rural areas such as my own county?
Yeah, great question. Several answers or several responses or thoughts. I mentioned and I gave you the link for looking at the National Network of Libraries of Medicine. Although the National Library itself would be happy to, I'm sure, respond to any individual requests or for information about where they might go for resources, your more localized link would be through the medical library of your region, which you can find out about by clicking on that link. I would encourage you also to go to visit your local public library, particularly for those who are in the disaster risk management profession. The idea of working as a team with your local librarian to set up a community resource both online and hard copy. As much as I'm an advocate of online access, I think it's important to have a good library of hard copy materials available to your community, the kinds of things that you, you know, that you would think of from the American Red Cross or from FEMA, and particularly localized versions of those things. If you go in hand with that collection of material and sit down and say you'd like to be a resource to the library to help develop that localized collection and help get the word out to the community, that grassroots way is probably the quickest and most effective way to go for local support.
Perfect. And following on the air conditioning issue, we have a comment from Randy Rice, who says, we are indeed, it must be a librarian, we are indeed designated as cooling centers, but have several library branches closing because of inadequate or failing air conditioning units. What a shame. I do have one. We're getting short on questions. I encourage anybody that's out there that's thinking of putting a further comment or question in to go ahead and do so. I have one question left from Guadalupe Pacheco, sorry if I butcher pronunciations, who says, I'm sorry, but maybe John already answered my question during his presentation. He's referring to, again, the curriculum, and asks if the curriculum will be web-based, if you know.
Yes, it will be web-based. Hello, Guadalupe, a good friend. And take an opportunity to plug some of the great work that Guadalupe has done. Guadalupe is with the Office of Minority Health and has worked to spearhead the program on cultural competency for first responders, which is something that I would commend to you and perhaps something that, well, not perhaps, something that I would say would be worthy of a presentation in and of itself. But yes, Guadalupe, this will be ultimately an online course.
Perfect. Evidently, we do have some librarians with us today, and you know, I encourage those folks to, you know, share your experiences with us and tell us how you've been working in your community. And we'll see how that goes. We'll give it a couple more minutes. This is definitely something where we could delve in further in a variety of ways, but the breadth of the resources to me is just amazing, and it's just great to hear about them and look forward to investigating those more deeply. So we'll give it one more minute and or so, and at that point, if we would wrap up early, we can wrap up early. I'm sure folks are interested in starting to check out these links and get on with kind of exploring the opportunities. I mean, to me, this is just a real opportunities for both the emergency management side and the library side. So.
And Amy, what's the best way if people want additional information? Can they contact you, and then I'd be happy to respond to any further leads, or should I give my email address, or how?
And as a matter of fact, I was going to ask if that was okay
sure.
During our wrap up here, if we could. Get your email address for further follow-up questions and where they can ask you directly, if you don't mind.
Sure. It's jcscott@cpsc. C as in Charlie, P as in Paul, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie.com.
Right. And we will include that in the transcript also, so folks can refer back to that.
Fine. Importantly, I would look forward to emails that I can then forward. You have the extent of my, this half hour is the extent of my my knowledge, but there are plenty of colleagues that I'm sure would be happy to follow up with you.
Right. And let me just ask one more thing. All right, you mentioned this is something, well, we were going to get the link and didn't get quite to it. You mentioned that during January The change in the Stafford Act was announced. That was this past January, was it?
Yes. January 8th was when it was announced.
Okay. All right. And I will follow up and see if we can't find a link.
Excuse me. January 7th.
7th. Okay. And see if we can't get that.
And those, for those of you who want to check it out, it's under Section 403 of the Stafford Act.
Okay. So that's basically making them eligible for emergency assistance type.
Emergency assistance for temporary relocation. So it's not kind of a full, it's if they get destroyed, they can move and get support for the move. But it's,
gotcha.
You know, there ought to be, again, a plug for libraries. There ought to be some other legislation, probably state or local, that recognizes, and that's another thing that if any of you are on your city council, encourage the city council to consider recognizing your local libraries as essential infrastructure, and then recognizing the contribution they make, and therefore trying to help or try to support the idea of preserving them in this economic hard time.
Let me go to one more topic. I think we'd kind of be remiss if we just didn't touch on it in, at least briefly, which is the idea of libraries, continuity of operations plan.
Yes. Thank you. That's important. I mentioned that only in passing, probably too much in passing, and that is one of the main things that the American Library Association and the Medical Library Association and NLM are doing with the National Network of Libraries is developing an awareness of the needs of the information resources, both the technology and the library, hard copy library resources, so that they are protected. We saw in many cases, for example, in Katrina, it's common in flooding where historical materials are frequently put in the basement and therefore get flooded. The idea of how you protect those in advance of an event and by understanding what your vulnerability is and then developing the networks that where you can communicate with your colleagues and colleague libraries so that if one of you needs assistance or one of you cannot provide the continuity of resource to your community, making provision for a colleague library to do that.
Yeah, so you're basically, in our lingo, talking about some kind of mutual assistance type arrangements, right?
Exactly, and I think that's part of the plan for the curriculum development. It's not just the community. Well, ultimately, it's serving the community, but there's that element of protecting the library resource that will be built in.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I think no more questions or comments online. I think you've done a very good job of introducing us to this topic, and I certainly do hope folks will follow on, and for those emergency managers out there, that they'll, you know, at least pass the information on to their respective community libraries so they can learn more about it. And we do, on behalf of Ava Jean and myself and the rest of the board of the directors of the EIIP, we thank you very much, John, for taking the time to be with us today and share the information.
Happy to do it.
And in wrap-up, again, the video and audio recording should be available later this afternoon. And if you're not on our mailing list and would like to get notices of future sessions and availability of our materials, please just go to our homepage to subscribe. Now, before you run off, we do just have this little rating and review form that we ask you to take a moment to complete. Note, we just ask you to rate the relevance of the information to you, and this also will assist us in our future programming. Speaking of which, our next program is scheduled for Wednesday, July 27th. Please watch for our announcement and plan to be with us then. And also, if you're on our mailing list, we expect to be sharing some exciting emforum.org news in the near future. So watch for that as well. Until next time, thanks for everyone for participating today, and have a great afternoon.